Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I am Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit Lejeune of Bridgeton Academy. Coach Whit, how are you?
Well, I'm doing better than I was. On the mend, among the most unpredictable vacations of all time here. Day after we got back from a very successful showcase weekend where we won three games, including two in a day. Got back and within 24 to 36 hours was sick. Full disclosure, first time COVID, which probably picked up in a gym somewhere. So first time for me, wasn't a lot of fun. Caught me by surprise, thought it was just a flu bug, and got over that in about a week. And next thing you know, had an ear infection, which they said was followed up for some people. And I've since learned that for others, they come down with a little bronchitis. So needless to say, I mean, literally every day of this break, I have been under the weather, which I think is a first. I guess it kept me out of trouble. I'll give you that. Small blessings made me thankful for, the fact that I'm above ground and my family is healthy and all small things, but, not exactly the way I drew it up. Heading into one of the most coveted vacations in this education business there is. So that's where I'm at, but we start back today. I'm actually going to the airport. We get done, pick up some guys. Then we head to Pennsylvania this weekend for a tournament. So it's a busy startup. And that's another reason I wanted to feel better is just to, that's about a 10-hour drive or so. So anyway, that's the state of the union. Feeling better, grateful for sure. Happy 24 to everybody. And we'll go from here.
Yeah. How to follow that one up is interesting, right? I think that the good thing for you is you may have gotten that one big sickness out the way. You know, if you got that out the way right now, you should be clear sailing, to the summertime.
I think you're right. And that's the way I tend to look at it that way. That tends to be a pattern a little bit for me too. So I'm very hopeful of that. That is the optimistic side of it. You know, another thing interesting is the reason I did full disclose my first experience with COVID. People, again, it's like a lot of things. It's personal. I don't think it carries quite the same baggage that maybe it did for a while. But, still, when I tell people, they'll, oh, yeah, hey, do you know Billy had it too? Or people you know really well. So people are very private about it. So I'm not telling you I'm announcing it to the world other than this pod. So if the world is listening and our listening ship has really expanded and the world knows. But, kind of interesting the experience people have with COVID. I don't know.
Yeah, I think. Well, I don't know. I think some people were, when COVID was happening, it was almost like people didn't want to admit to having COVID because it was like dirty.
Right.
It's like a dirty word or something. It's just like I've always just looked at COVID like it was just another thing that you get. Like you don't really have, like you can fight it off the way that you fight off any other thing. Like it's another flu. It's a different type of flu for me. That's the way I've always thought about it. And it's interesting now that it's become normalized almost. There is the when somebody says, oh, I had COVID, it's not, oh my gosh, right? Because there was so much fear-mongering behind the term. When the term was first introduced, that when you told some, if you told somebody that you had COVID, they were trying to figure out if you were going to die.
You know, well, and like, let's make sure we understand too that at that time there was greater risk to percentages of the population, obviously older and predisposed, you know, but also just in general before vaccinations and everything else. So without getting political about the damn thing.
Yeah, but like it's okay, because I'm almost tired of the whole everything's got to be political, right? Sometimes it could just be a good conversation, right? Because we were told this thing is killing people at an alarming rate. And then we saw the numbers come out, and the numbers bared out that this thing was killing people the same way the flu was killing people. Like the rate of flu dropped precipitously when the height of COVID. Everything was COVID. Everything was, you had medical companies who were using the government exemptions and bonuses and whatever it might be to get money. I know it because my brother's in the medical field, and he was like, yo, everything is COVID right now. Like everything, because of what they were able to get in that. But I think just from our standpoint, from just the normal Joe Schmo schlub side of it, we were looking at it and going, okay, all of the reporting that we're hearing on it is this thing can kill you.
Right.
Because that's all we're hearing. That's all we're seeing. And then when the numbers started to come out to go, oh, all right, well, maybe not so much as what was being told to us by the media, you know, like I think that's when it started to kind of dissipate, where the negative stigma behind it started to dissipate. And then when you see like people and like the results from people who have had the vaccine that may have had some type of side effects from the vaccine that are starting to come out now, you have people going, "Ha, I told you," to the, you know, the people who did not get vaccinated. And then you have other people who've been vaccinated a million times and they're perfectly fine. So it's like the same way with every other, like, the same way with every other disease that has come along, there has been like people who have tried to take advantage of it for good. And then there's people who've been on both sides of it. And we don't really know, there is no right or wrong. It's just whatever your choice is. But I'm happy that you were able to come through it and that you're back and ready to go and in time for your boys to return, your young men to return. Because if you are taking that long trip, are you driving that? Are you driving that trip?
Yeah, driving that. Yeah. Driving
Ooh.
It.
Boy.
So that's a little old school prep school, hopping the vans. And
yeah, that's definitely old school prep school, hopping the van and go. But it's always been fun. Those, except for when it's like really terrible weather, then that's it's not so much fun.
That's the only drawback.
Yeah. Not so much fun.
And I would be remiss. I'm probably somewhere in the middle of you two. So if I had my final little comment there back to the COVID would be, I'm a little, I know there's a lot of people that I think that would completely agree with you. And then I would be probably moved over to the middle to say part of the dissipation was getting a healthy community, if not, you know, in states, et cetera, you know, I'm a vaccination believer, and you know, just having people like anything though, be as healthy as they possibly can be, because I think the thing's a little tricky. And I also think, I mean, this is just me because I got a little of that doomsayer side of me. I think we got another wave here brewing, which again, I don't think is going to prove to be any, you know, threat to life across the board, right? But I think is potentially going to be a disruptor this winter, and I don't want it to be, but I just have I have a sick feeling, maybe not quite, that's a little strong, but I've got this feeling that there's going to be a lot of disruption coming our way that we're not through, which again I didn't see coming, but that may just be my own overreaction to the past couple of weeks. So anyway, we'll see, but I'm hearing it wide and far out there. And so anyway,
wouldn't be surprised. By the way, I don't know if you, I am double vaxxed. I'm a double vax guy. Like, I believe when you're going to give me the information, if you give me the information and you tell me that this is in my best interest, you know more than I do, I'm probably going to lean towards you when it comes to how to now. Am I getting any more vaccines? Probably not. And that's because, very similar to with the flu shot, I used to get flu vaccines. Right. I don't get flu shots anymore, right? Like, I feel like my body is now at a point where whatever the mutation is, it's ready to fight. And I do enough to keep it ready to fight. I'm always in fight mode. So hopefully that wave that's coming is a small wave.
I want to see your transition out of this, because you make great transitions. So I'm very curious right now what your transition's going to be right here.
Well, I mean, we're talking about being ready for a fight, and you know, the NBA is in fight mode now. We're after Christmas break, right? We're after Christmas break, and that is normally where the NBA goes into fight mode, where they go into who's going to represent whom in the playoffs. Interesting enough, and I want your opinion on this. How do you feel about the NFL essentially walking into Christmas and slapping the NBA across the face and going, oh, you thought it was cute? Like, we should just, nah. We're going to put all the football games on Christmas Day and completely obliterate your viewership for your NBA prime Christmas Day games.
Well, I mean, I didn't realize how many games actually were on, how many NFL games were on Christmas. So you'd have to tell me how many days there were. But obviously they've had a lot of success with the Friday games, you know, the Christmas Eve game, the whole buildup. So I'm not surprised, because, you know, the NFL is king. So yep. Kings do what kings do. So if you're give them another day, they'll take it. But as far as for fans, I love it, because now I just have a smorgasbord. I mean, I'm at a buffet with every good option I could potentially want in front of me.
Well, yeah. I mean, and for people, if you are not aware, like Whit, they had an NFL game for every slot throughout the day. So they had a 1 p.m. game, they had a 4 o'clock game, and then they had a nighttime game. And then they gave you the Ravens and the 49ers as the Monday night game. Eagles Giants was the 4 o'clock, I believe, and Raiders Chiefs, yeah. I believe that was the 1 o'clock game. And so, like, But to put it essentially directly in opposition of the NBA,
yeah,
I had always thought that there was some gentleman's handshake, some unwritten rule, like, hey, NBA, we're going to stay away from really invading on your Thanksgiving territory. And NFL, we're going to kind of stay away from your NBA on Christmas. But then I started thinking about it, and there's Thanksgiving basketball games. There are Thanksgiving NBA games.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty sure that the NFL said, well, I don't know if we can do this every Christmas, because not every Christmas falls on a Monday. But the fact that we have Christmas on a Monday means that we can roll out the entire football slate and just smite. I mean, it was crazy when they started talking about the numbers and what the NFL was doing as opposed to the marquee basketball NBA games. We know the NFL is king because football is king, right? But in this country, but to think that the appetite would have just been so overwhelming for one when the other has just been a Christmas Day staple, is it's almost like it's like, I don't know if you followed it or not, but Mariah Carey has been the number one Christmas album seller. Her Christmas album has been the number one Christmas album seller. Her song "All I Want for Christmas Is You" has been the number one for as long as it's been out, right? And this year it wasn't. This year was "Rocking Around the Christmas Tree." And "Rocking Around the Christmas Tree" has been around longer than "All I Want for Christmas Is You." However, it seemed to have taken like a back seat to it. And then all of a sudden it was almost like they just said, wait a minute. I've been here longer. I'm the bigger dog. Let me just come and slap you on the hand. And it was different. I just thought it was interesting how that unfolded. And I'm wondering now, is the NFL's plan to try to put an NFL game on every Christmas? And if so, how does that work with Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yeah. Well, I would assume they will. And good question about the Tuesday, Wednesday, but they've already, again, obviously experimented. You know, Monday was an experiment back in the day, for God's sake. Well, we all remember that, you know, anyone that's old enough remembers that and how novel and exciting, and it's unbelievable that you could focus on a game. But then Thursday, which I'm not a big believer for some reason, so I haven't latched on to getting as excited about Thursday. So Monday still carries more juice for me. But if they can do, yeah, I think there's, if they, why not do, I think they will do Christmas Day games regardless, and then just figure out the short weeks, long weeks, bye teams, you know, everything they got to do to make it as reasonable as possible. I'm also wondering if the NFL, you know, at one time maybe had the gentleman's agreement wasn't with the NBA. It might have been with their teams to say, look, we're all making enough money here, or all this and that, and we're not going to make you play on Christmas Day. Like, we got enough. Whereas now, obviously, there's no such thing as enough. So they're jumping into Christmas Day.
You know, another Christmas staple is LeBron James playing on Christmas Day. It's the Boston Celtics playing on Christmas Day. And so when you add LeBron James, the Boston Celtics, and LeBron James' team, the Los Angeles Lakers, which has a tendency to play on Christmas Day as well, it turns into a marquee matchup. I believe out of all of the matchups, it was the most, like, I was the most interested in it, not just because I'm a Lakers fan, but because it was the only matchup that looked like something that could be an NBA final. You had Golden State playing Denver. That's not going to be an NBA final. You had Milwaukee playing New York, Philadelphia, Miami, Dallas, and Phoenix. Like, that was the only Eastern Conference versus Western Conference matchup. And so, full disclosure, fans, Boston did win 126 to 115. It's not that they won. It's how they won. When you consider how the Lakers played, Kristaps Porzingis had a really good game, but Anthony Davis went for 40 points in that game. Like, he had a stellar game, and that was, like, Anthony Davis, like, what we all keep saying from our side, from Lakers fans, if Anthony Davis can play at a top three in the league level, then the Lakers can beat anyone. Well, he played like a top three in the league, and they still got beat. I think that says more about what the Lakers still need in order to be successful than it does about the Celtics looking like they look with Kristaps in the lineup. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, a couple of reactions. So one is, yeah, I'm going to flip back as a Boston fan and say, like I did from the very beginning, I love the Porzingis trade. And like people are now commenting all over the place, like, wow, he, you know, what a difference maker he is for a bunch of reasons, not just on the offensive end, but on the defensive end. Sure, you still have the long-term health issue. That's the only thing that people, you know, got in their back pocket. Oh, you just wait, you just wait, you just wait. But on the surface, you know, I think that he's the difference in that game and in any game where the Celtics look like a different club than they have in the past. Now, to a certain degree, Holiday and Derek White, who we've also talked about on this pod before, deserve a ton of credit. Like, you can't, you know, it's a team sport, so that's the problem when you start dissecting individuals, because all this stuff is team sport, you know, and so you, it's just not accurate always to dissect it too far down to, but that's what I would say. It was more about the Celtics overcoming a great effort by Anthony Davis, and they're good enough to do that. Okay, so that's what I think. And I think it starts and ends with Porzingis, but White and Holiday are an integral part of that, as is Brown and Tatum, you know, developing a chemistry not only with each other, but within the flow of the team that keeps the ball popping for Boston and not playing stagnant, stand-around basketball. The other reaction I have is, you know, in full disclosure, against kind of stealing this from J.J. Redick and Tim Legler on Old Man and the Three. You know,
steal
the NBA,
a lot from J.J.
Yeah, I do, because I've been listening to him more, and I like him, and really good insight. I don't do every pod of his, but I do like the weekly. It helps me catch up on the week, and I like Legler a ton, his analysis. So it gives me an easy way to kind of catch up if I haven't been watching as much. But their thing was, you know, if you're the NBA, you got to create the dream matchups Christmas Day. So Boston, LA, in fact, was the marquee one. But, you know, you could have had – and I like the idea of a potential final too, so East and West matchups. But they had – you know, you should have had Embiid and Giannis. So Philly, Milwaukee. You know, if you could have set up games, if you could have a flex schedule, which they're doing in, you know, a bunch of leagues now, flexing things, and then your league tournaments, then make Christmas one of these flex deals. Don't prearrange it, you know, 6 months in advance, and just create the matchups that are going to be absolute must-see TV. I think they'll do it. I thought it was a great
I like that idea. But I also, and I will go one further on that idea. I believe those matchups should never be interconference matchups.
Right.
Like, it shouldn't be Embiid versus Giannis. It should be Embiid versus Joker. Right. It should be Dame Lillard versus Steph Curry. Yep. Like, yep. It should be New York versus Phoenix. Like those types of matchups. Like, why do we need to see the matchups we're going to see anyway? We're going to see Philadelphia play Milwaukee because they play in the same conference, and that's where the predominance of their games are spent. But we may not see much of Giannis versus KD, you know, or we may not see as much. Like, so I want to see those. I want to see potential NBA final matchups.
I like that. I would not be opposed to that at all. I think there's a lot of sense there. And the other matchup is, you know, putting star players, so even if it's not championship teams, putting must-see players on. So the early games could be, you know,
Anthony Edwards
for the Pacers, right?
Halliburton. No, he's not. Halliburton right. For the Pacers.
For the Pacers, right?
But Halliburton versus Anthony Edwards, right. Like two
Ja Morant, you know, blah blah blah. So you could figure out the must see individuals and kind of do your Steph and Dame thing, even though their teams may not be in the top tier So yeah. That, again, a lot of possibilities there. Like it.
Yeah, I think the Christmas game, and I love that idea by whomever it was, Legs or or Reddit, who, by the way, I love both of those dudes. I think both of them are really great at, I think JJ's really great at podcasting. I think Tim is really great when you want to get into like some good minutia, right? Yeah. You want to get into some good minutia. Tim Legler is there for that.
He's really good.
Yeah, he is there. But it's so, like, I have been surprised, and I always, I lean on some people who are like, on the words of some people who do podcasting for a living, but like podcasting about podcasting, sometimes people will say it's like, eh. But podcasting about podcasters and what they bring to the space, Gilbert Arenas might be one of my favorite listens because he gives you that type of thing that JJ Redick gives you, the storytelling with like some inside thought process that you may not have thought about before, like a way, but it's not filtered. It's not washed up. It's not clean. It's as raw and as, you know, authentic as you can possibly get. And I'm not saying that JJ Redick isn't authentic, because I think he's who he is, right? But I think that JJ Redick has discernment. and Agent Zero has no discernment. He didn't have discernment as a player. He was getting those shots up. He doesn't have discernment as a podcaster. He's going to get the gun off and he's going to shoot it as many times as he possibly can. No pun intended, because we know his background. But I thought it would be annoying, but he is a surprisingly good listen, especially if he's an interview from somebody else.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing that JJ has, in addition to being a good storyteller, he's got another commodity that the best in pods that I'm aware of probably have. And again, podding is so big, it's crazy. So I don't have enough time to, or interest for that matter, to extend myself too far. But the bottom line is I think the best podders are like the best TV and radio announcers. They have a voice. And JJ Redick has a voice. Our friend Konzo Martin on here, you know, and you commented on it. I mean, you could just listen to him. Obviously, he could be a minister if he wanted to be, or anything else for that matter, because some people just have a voice that really resonates. And I find, you know, that's always, Marv Albert, or, you know, go back through and look at all the great people you listen to, and then you see him, you go, oh, I didn't really, that he doesn't look like what I kind of envisioned him as, you know, if it was a radio guy or even, but, you know, so many, you know, same thing with the news anchors, for God's sake. I mean, in news anchors, in addition to appearance, right, in addition to looks, particularly women, you know, it's the voice, you know, easy on the ears. So anyway, that's that. That's my reaction to JJ. He's got a hell of a good voice, in addition to knowing what he's talking about, being able to tell a good story.
Absolutely. I think you might have hit the nail on the head when you talked about the voice, right? Because it is a very not just distinguishable, but it makes you want to listen to it. It just has something that draws the ear. It draws the ear in. So that's a great point.
And we know sometimes with these ex-stars, say in football, that when they go on TV as, particularly as analysts, we know right away the other side of the track is, you know, and this may be voice or not, but someone that doesn't have a good delivery, it doesn't work. And you kind of know it right away. Now, that's why some people write it all kind of – it's beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So some Tony Romo drives some people up the wall. You know, it's like scratching fingernails against a chalkboard. I like them. Bill Walton drives people bananas, right, with his just continuous banter. We'll leave the Grateful Dead out of it. But I like him because, you know, in, if you filter, if you don't mind, if you don't get offended by the randomness of it all, he gives you some unbelievable nuggets. But you do, so you my point again is sometimes it doesn't take very long where you go, yeah, you know, I don't really want to listen to this guy. And other times you go, man, I could listen to this guy forever. Or gal.
Yeah, somebody I think, you know, and transitions, but darn, but like, how is LeBron James still doing this? Like, well, how is he still this good? Like, somebody was saying something, and I almost wanted to just engage and just snap at the person because they were like, oh my gosh, LeBron James has played such and such many more years than Michael Jordan, and he only has this many more, blah, blah, blah. I think it was like 40-point games or something. He was like, he's played so many more games than Michael Jordan, and he only has XYZ more 40-point games. And I just wanted to be like, yo, stop. Take everything away before this year. Like, take everything away and just look at what he's doing this year. If you had nothing else to put out there, this man is 39 years old, newly 39, by the way. Happy birthday, LeBron James. Happy belated birthday. Newly 39 years old in a league that has skewed itself to young, ultra-athletic basketball players. And he is averaging 25.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, and 7.5 assists, which is on par with what he averaged when he was in his prime. Like this isn't just some, this isn't hanging on and getting a few more years of juice out of the squeeze. Like, this dude is still him. Like, this is Jerry Rice. This is Jerry Rice with the Raiders his first year when he went for 1,000 yards with the Raiders, I believe. Except it's if he did it for like 5 or 6 or 7 more years. Like, we've never seen anything like this. Basketball is 100%, right? LeBron James has intelligence and he has athleticism. Would you say LeBron James is the most skilled basketball player?
Well, I'm going to cut in and I'm going to say a lot of things right now.
I'm just wondering, where are we at? Like, what are we thinking?
Here's where we're at. Okay, so to start with what you just said last. Okay, that has to be the start of the conversation. The intelligence, which then translates into his habits, approach, mindset, work, whatever. So let's just acknowledge everything that it takes to do what he's doing. Okay. Then I would say number two, you know, there's an old expression about 7-footers, right? When everyone gets tired, the 7-footer is still 7 foot, you know, and everyone else is 6 foot or whatever. Well, guess what? I mean, LeBron is a supremely and always was supremely gifted athlete with size and with everything that you could possibly want. Okay. And could be a tremendous you know, he would be a tremendous football player. You know, he would be a marvel at a lot of things, and he happens to take his talents to the basketball court. So I don't think that, you know, I'm using the analogy to 7'4". Look at, he's, you know, I'm not going to say freak, but he might be like a genetic freak of some type, you know, and I mean that not in some, because I just can't take away from everything that he's done to get to this point and then continues to do, because it doesn't happen. And I'll close by saying, well, and it, you know, you're going to know it's coming a mile away, but we saw the same thing with my favorite of all time, Tom Brady. And he just, you know, and our guy, Bill Belichick, I'm not trying to take us away too far, but just, you know, may lose his job because he misevaluated the best of all time, you know, and it would kind of be like someone, you know, maybe a couple of years ago saying, LeBron's getting toward the end. We're going to let him go while we can. So I just think there are a few special athletes out there in all these sports, right? I think Gretzky was one in hockey. Okay. And I don't know it as well, but they approach it at such a level that they're able to do things now, obviously much later in their career, that is just mind blowing.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything that you said. The interesting part, and it's a good transition because I had a question for you. The interesting part with Tom Brady is this is what the Patriots have always done, and no one has ever had a problem with it until it was Tom Brady.
Well, I had a problem with it before. I had a problem when they did it with Adam Vinatieri. And not to say that I get it.
I'm about to say that. Yeah.
Ended up being pretty good. But no, I would look at Adam Vinatieri delivered something to New England that you just can't really even calculate. You can't put into words when anyone that is my age or older knows the extent of the ineptitude forever. Bob Kraft knows it. And it's like, you know what? For me, I think there are transcendent players on these teams that I wish ownership and coaches just say, you know what, you are one of the chosen few, and you're going to get to basically dictate the terms that you go out on. So I think Belichick, in some respect, is getting his fair karma back for that ruthlessness, which, you know, made it more about coaching maybe than about the players, you know, and no more so than at the quarterback position, but like you say, at a bunch of other positions. And so I think I did have an issue with the way they treated several players, and Teddy Johnson, who's on air locally, will make comments. There are people that know that have never, basically you haven't been able to say anything, right? Because if you win at the level they're winning at, you know, whatever. I don't want to turn this into a
No. I want to stay here, though. I want to stay here because has everybody taken their Sudafed so that they've gotten rid of their Zappy fever? Is the Zappy fever officially gone now? The Sudafed is kicked in? The Robitussin kicked in?
No. Zappy played. I mean, if anything, he made it tougher again with a terrific second half performance. Forget, you know, I'm not dismissing the first half, three picks, but he brought them back and they laid Buffalo, which could be an AFC champion, brought them to six on the road with, you know, so
I got
the
you.
Only thing I would say, the only, no, but the only thing I would say is, look at no one in New England, and I'm speaking for myself here, no one looks at him and says, yeah, we want Bailey Zappe to be the starting quarterback next year. I do think if they got healthy and with him at quarterback, they would be much better and potentially a playoff team when they get Stevenson back and a couple of weapons and all that. But I'm on board, just to get it out there, I'm on board drafting a quarterback. But if you really don't want to do it, if you don't got one of the top two, or you don't think our guy from I want to put the guy at Washington right on my list now because I haven't heard him in the discussion for the top two. I'm not sure why he's not up there with more people, but
injuries.
But I would take Baker Mayfield or Russell Wilson in a heartbeat to lead. Once I did my due diligence.
You know, by everything that you just said, there's zero reason why the Patriots should get rid of Bill Belichick.
Yeah,
with everything that you just said,
right?
Injuries and all of this and if that, they'd be a playoff caliber team. And the fact that they just played really well, despite their quarterback throwing three interceptions, they were still able to push Buffalo. Clearly, he hasn't lost the locker room. Clearly, he still knows how to coach up defense pretty well. Why? If the only issue is more consistent quarterback play, then why would anyone want to get rid of the coach that has been responsible for all of the success that your organization has ever had?
I'm going to say this to you. I'm not sure. This is one of those I'm going to have you go back and listen to past pods. But I'm going to say something right now, because I have no idea what I said 4 weeks ago. I oftentimes don't know what the hell I said 10 minutes ago. But I don't think they're getting rid of Belichick. I think he stays. And I know we talked about it, and I think you were an advocate of him staying anyway. Absolutely. I'm not sure. Right. I do not think there's a chance in hell they will get rid of him. I don't believe it. I think it's going to be some good theater. I think Kraft is going to be very public. When they make the decision, because there's going to be such animosity in the public, he's going to have to be very visible and say, listen, folks, this is what happens in tough times and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And here's what we're doing that we think is in the best interest of the team. I fully expect them to keep Belichick. I'll say it now. And I would support that, too. I would support that wholeheartedly for all the reasons that you're saying.
I just think I wonder about, we know that fan bases can be unrealistic, right? So we'll start there. Fan bases can be unrealistic. They say some things sometimes that doesn't make a lot of sense. But this is one of those ones that I just go, what do you want to happen? Like, what is your ultimate like end game? Who are you getting that's going to come in and, number one, be better than Bill Belichick, but number two, want to come and take on that level of scrutiny following Bill Belichick? Like,
I want Belichick to drop his ego, okay? You know, just put the ego, check his ego at the door and say, listen, like, you can hire a general manager or not. But hey, I want Bill to say, look, you guys just go get me the players and I'll coach. You guys go get me the players because I can coach DeMario Douglas. I can coach Rager. I can coach Bailey Zappi. I can coach all these dudes. I can, when our secondary or we lose some of our best players in the defense, I can coach up the guys that fill in. So, like, you guys go get me the groceries. I don't need to pick the groceries. Just let me coach the team. And if he could check his ego at the door and do that, and then they could land a weapon or three, like a couple of difference makers, including a quarterback, but ideally a slot receiver and a wideout, I'd be happy as hell. That would be the best Christmas gift anyone can give me.
Yeah. Except the problem there is the reason that they've had the success is he stopped letting them pick the groceries. Like, that was the issue. That's the famous tuna issue, right?
Right.
That's the big tuna issue. The reason that they've had the success that they've had is because he came in and said, listen, I'm only coming here if you're going to let me do what you didn't let that guy do.
What you didn't let Pete Carroll, because the Pete Carroll, Bobby Greer, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because Kraft wanted, you right, because of the Parcells deal, Kraft, Bobby Greer, Pete Carroll. Then all of a sudden he said, oh boy. And so then he let Belichick do exactly what you're talking about.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. Yep. So in Belichick's mind, he's got to be thinking, well, no, like they haven't proven that they know how to do this.
Yeah.
Like they haven't, I've proven that I actually know how to do this. And outside of the last, you know, couple years, it's worked.
I'm just saying he's got nothing more to prove, obviously. So just have take one, like he's getting older. So take something off your plate, you know, learn to delegate.
I actually would like for him to go outside of his tree and hire some coaches that are going to bring in some different thought processes on how to do this thing, as opposed to just the way that he's done it for a million years. Find like some type of synergy between these offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators that are getting the job done at a high level, and what you've been able to do with the way you've managed to structure and have that Patriot way. I think that there's a great middle ground in there. If he would be willing to do that, I think it could help a lot.
I think you might be right. I would just say across the board in sport right now, and I don't have the data to back this up, but it's anecdotal for sure in conversations with people and what I've seen. It's going the other way. I think in part because of social media, the great, you know, influencer of the day, but for a lot of reasons, staffs are more insular than ever, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's rare. And I know we can find them and there are stories about them, but I think it's more rare today where people are going outside of their sphere to make hires. That's what I'm saying. They're just not willing to trust it and all the dynamics that go with hiring from the outside. That's my sense of things across the board, all sports.
Yeah, we'll get out of here on this, and because I think it's a great point. But I think that the reason is it's always comes back to the dollar. Nepotism is at an all-time high in athletics coaching. If you look around the league, the only way, and this is actually getting to college as well, the only way that you're getting jobs nowadays is if you are kin to and or have some type of relationship with someone who already has or has had the job. You are not seeing people come up who don't have any ties and or connections to the ecosystem be able to break through. We're seeing it at the NFL level. We're seeing it at the college level. We see it in broadcasting. We see it in front offices. Like, the people who are getting the jobs are the people who have some ties in. So for instance, Bill Belichick has his son on the staff. His son, who started as the lowest of the low, and then just over years was able to stack up a resume where he keeps getting his title increased that nobody pays attention to, because why would you care if he's the receiver's coach or the DB's coach? But we know that as you continue to build up that resume, it becomes a lot easier for you to then transition that somewhere else. And we see it across the league, the entire head football coach for the 49ers, his dad.
Yeah, Shanahan.
Kyle. Yeah, excuse me. There we go. The entire Shanahan tree is built off nepotism. All of those young, quote unquote, dynamic innovators, they're all off the same buddy group. And then they've just kind of sprawled off and done their things in the NFL, but they all got their chance because they knew somebody on the inside. Like, you don't know somebody, you're not getting a chance. And I think it's diluted the coaching. Number one, I think it's diluted the coaching. And number two, I think it's put us in situations like you just said, where you see much less of people going outside because they think this is the way. I got inside. Now I've got to do the same thing that got me here.
Pardon the interruption.
Well, I will say this. I agree with the spirit of what you're saying. I would not take it as far as you take it. I just think it's harder. So I do think there's still opportunity to start at the very bottom if you're willing to do it. And if you're a nobody, it's still America. It's still possible. It's still possible in sport. It really is. But you're going to have to start at the bottom of the bottom. That's going to be easier for some than others. But it is still happening, and people are still rising from obscurity without the connection. But does it pay more than ever to have connections? And again, I'm not going to argue with the spirit of what you're saying, and I think it parallels everything else in this country that the board is tilted and slanted. But I wouldn't say that it's impossible, and I wouldn't say that to it. It's just a question of there's a lot of factors that are going to have to go into it, but do you get an opportunity to start somewhere? And then are you willing, in fact, and able to just navigate the things you're going to have to rise in the same way as people that, you know, are no more qualified and probably less are going to be easier. You know, again, everything you said. So I wouldn't sign off on, across the board, what you said, it's just that's too rigid for me. But I know that there's a lot of truth in it.
Conspiracy theorist wit, a wit lejeure that likes a good conspiracy theory. You don't believe that this is all like systemic? You think that there's still just organic people popping through here? Like,
yes, I do believe it. And
give me one. Like, just one.
Eric Spoelstra, you know, for the Heat.
Okay. All right.
And then, I'll go back down because I do follow it and I don't have the names and some of them, but I know, and I know more basketball than others. Like, I tell guys, this is the truth. Like, I mean, I just had this conversation couple of weeks back with a young coach that was in a business, because in basketball the ways to advance now are, you know, exactly what we're talking about, getting on some staff at any level wherever it is and then trying to make this thankless climb, or you get involved in one of these internet, you know, not just showcase stuff, but the grassroots scene, you know, getting involved on the admin side of the grassroots where you get connected to everyone and then you're hired essentially because you've got connections to everyone, and then they teach you how to coach. They don't care about the coaching. They need the connections. So that's the other way. So I've met a few young guys, you know, looking to make it in the business. And I just say, hey, look, I mean, you've got a chance because you're sitting here doing, no one knows you. You're in the most obscure position. You didn't play maybe, blah, 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 blah. If you're willing to hang in, that's one of the tickets to making the top. That's why so many in basketball, that's why so many of these coaches, head coaches of Division I are ex-managers. Ex never even played. They were managers. They were managers, you know.
Willing and able.
Yeah, but managers, like nonetheless.
I know, but I'm saying the able is the part we gloss over that part, right? Everybody. The able is not.
Right, but I know that, yeah, and I agree with that, and I don't have the data on that, right? I know it's a lot easier if you've got a bankroll behind you to do what I'm talking about, and that certainly has helped some, but I know there are also others, I'm sure, and I'll look into it a little further. It's an interesting topic, that have had very little behind them, have slept on couches and done all of that stuff and eaten the worst kinds of foods, you know, and scraped by to do it. So again, I just to, you know, I'm with you on the systemic piece. I don't disagree at all. Look at, man, our system is fucked, period. Okay. But I'm just not willing to say that things don't still happen, because they do, and they do in every walk of life. So yeah, that's all.
I definitely painting that with the broad stroke of it, everything, it's not 100%, because nothing is ever 100%. I just think it's at an all-time high.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
And definitely. I also want to finish by saying, by the way, just going back, the voice. Now, one of the voices that we're all learning to listen to our sports with is the female voice. Like, you know, Doris Burke, one of the poster childs of plenty of, but in the lead role rather than the sideline in a short skirt, you know, in the middle of winter, where we are listening to lead females and trying and accepting our sports with that. That's a new voice.
You can't do that, because it opens up an entirely new conversation that we're going to have on the next podcast. We're going to start with that. The female voice in sports. Because I have strong agreement, but I also have strong disagreement as well. And I think it's an interesting intersection we find ourselves in right now. By the way, you already know this, but you know how much I love Doris Burke. Like, Doris Burke is one of the best to ever do it, in my opinion. It was long for her to get to where she is right now. And another person who I thought would have been in broadcasting, who was really, really good, the now head coach of Duke, Kara Lawson, who was fantastic at the job. And I was actually hurt that she went back to coaching, because she was so good at what she was doing on the microphone. But great women in the space, and I look forward to having that conversation with you next time. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been another episode of the Zebra Stripes podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LeJour. Let us be the last to tell you Happy New Year, and we will see you next time.